下一节咱们讲这个 portability， 所谓 portability 就是说这个跨平台的可移植性。Steve 会讲到啊，他会给你解释究竟我们为什么要做这个。Okay, Steve, please go ahead.
Talking. Okay.
Talking, please.
So back to portability. So what's new in the world? 10 years ago, it was a wonderful place. If you wanted to target 95% of the world's devices, all you had to do was target Windows. We liked that. It was cool. It doesn't work quite as well anymore. Nowadays, if you want to hit 95% of all of the consumers in the world, you have to build like four darn apps. One for Windows, one for OS X, one for Android, and one for iOS. This is an expensive proposition. So what's new in C++ in Visual Studio? For a lot of years, for as long as we've been around, we've only been interested in building applications for Windows. It's been what we do. I don't know, 50% of all of our energy was devoted towards making Windows development more interesting, and then maybe the other 50% was C++ development as different from Windows. So in the last year, we've started working very hard to change this completely. And now we're very interested in making sure that Visual Studio is the development experience for any developer. And the place where we've chosen to break out first is in cross-platform mobile development. So in the olden times, you needed Visual C++, which is our C1XX compiler and our C2 backend for targeting Windows and Windows Phone and Xbox. And today, we can use Visual Studio to target those scenarios. And we also can bundle with Clang and LLVM and GCC for targeting Android and now iOS. In RTM, we ship some iOS support as well. So I'm going to talk a little bit about why. So why would you do this? Well, we really want people, again, why is C++ great? C++ great because you can reuse existing C++ libraries to target multiple platforms. It's cross-platform code can and should be written in C++. You can then share that platform code easily, powered by VS 2015 productivity. So go into the Visual Studio IDE and write code and edit your code, not just for using for Windows, but also powerful IntelliSense and refactoring support also for Android and iOS. And also, we allow you to go ahead and create native activity applications for Android and Xamarin native Android applications that link with C++. So when we started this effort, we went out and we talked to people, as we like to, and we said, how are you guys doing cross-platform applications? And the vast majority of people, several years ago, for instance, were doing it in what we call a siloed model. They had one team whose job it was to write the Windows app, one team whose job it was to write the OS X app, one team for Android, and one team for iOS. That's a lot of not shared code with siloed implementations. So what we're recommending is a more modern design for these applications, which is share as much code as you possibly can in C++, and then adapt that code to the platform with small adaptation layers. So for instance, as I'm gonna go and show you in a little bit, the Office team has been a pioneer of this approach. Microsoft Office is written in this style. If you use Microsoft Office on your iPhone, you have a small layer of Objective-C at the top that does the UI, and a small layer at the bottom that talks to the Cocoa platform. Or for instance, on Android, you would use this to go and use the camera APIs. You call back into Java at the bottom. But the vast majority of the business logic is in C++ in the middle. So what actually in practice happened is in PowerPoint, once they were all done with modifying their code to be mostly cross-platform C++, starting from a Windows-only code base, they managed to get on Android 97% of all of the code on Android in Windows in Office PowerPoint is actually C++ code, and only 3% make up the platform adaptation layer at the bottom and the UI at the top. Okay, so if you're interested, if you have a source base that you're interested in taking from Windows and making it a cross-platform code base, I want to recommend two resources to you. One of them, the CPPCon, is the most prestigious C++ conference in the United States. Last year, there were two different talks by two completely different companies about the same topic. So the Office team actually did a two-hour presentation, which you can watch the complete version of on YouTube, about how they converted their code base from Windows-only code to cross-platform code and got that 97% number. But lest you believe that this is only some crazy Microsoft idea, and actually let me pause there for a second. Office has done this, Bing Maps has done this, Minecraft has done this. We are working with many, many different teams inside of Microsoft because almost every Microsoft app is now a cross-platform application. And this is the model that people are following. But at not Microsoft, Dropbox, which is a cloud drive competitor, OneDrive competitor, they also did a one-hour talk about how they tried the silo model and failed, and then moved on to the C++ shared model, and they do all of their development in C++ for Dropbox. Haven't moved them onto Visual Studio yet, but you know, someday. Also, we have a bunch of materials on our blog. Actually, I just want to make a plug for our blog all up. If you're interested in getting in tighter with the developments in our product as you go forwards, VC blog is updated quite frequently. There's at least a post a week, sometimes multiple posts a week.
Shall we just click and show them what's on it?
Yeah. Did that work?
Does not appear working.
It's because it's in product. It's in
presentation mode.
Uh-huh.
I see. Oh, okay.
Our blog looks like this. Lots and lots of material in here. Windows 10 development. Here's how to do cross-platform code sharing with Visual C++. You know, our newest Eclipse importer, if you want to take your code from Eclipse and import it into Visual Studio so that you don't have to use Eclipse anymore. All of these things. If you're interested in Internet of Things, another good resource inside Microsoft for learning about these sorts of developments is I host a monthly video series called Going Native on Channel 9, and I interview various C++ developers from around Microsoft and out in the community in order to learn about new interesting developments in the C++ language.
I think you could show them the simplified Chinese edition.
Okay. Well, yeah, and
that's fine. That's fine. Yeah.
Okay, and also, for me, Chinese practice is always good. We have a team in Xi'an in China to translate all of our blog posts within a few days into unfortunately simplified Chinese. But this is useful as well if you want to try to use that. This one. It's not super easy to find. So this is blogs.msdn.com/b/c. I think of the /c as Chinese, and that's how I remember where it is.
This is 不会在意吧, 就simplify Chinese. 我知道, 因为现在对岸很多东西很快, 所以我知道大家两边都看, 所以我想, 好, 资源, 这个, 大家就可以enjoy一下。 Okay.
Okay, so at this point, I'm going to actually show you a video, and I'm going to let Ray try his darndest to keep up with it while we hold on.
Okay, yeah. 下面我们给大家放一段小小的视频, 这个视频就是给大家演示一下我们在2015里面对这个安卓平台开发和这个跨平台开发的一些体验是怎么样。 我们希望就是这个视频呢很短，给大家示意一下。如果大家感兴趣的话，既然2015都可以这很自由的，就是说能够可以打可以下载，你们试试看，是不是合用，给我们一些反馈，好吧？
开始吧，
开始。
Go。
好，这是很标准的 Visual Studio 的界面啊，大家可以看到，在这里我们新加了一个叫 Cross Platform 跨平台的一页。这一页在这个新的项目的这个 dialog 上面有好几个模板。这个模板的话，它现在选择的模板是一个这种动态库的一个模板，这是针对安卓。你看后面是 .0.0 对吧？所以我们模板有动态库，有静态库，同时我们上面还有一个叫做 Native Activity Application。这是这个谷歌，它这个在安卓，它允许你用 C 加加从头到尾写一些这个应用，它给它的名字很奇怪，叫 Native Activity。Native Activity 的话，一般来说的话，你使用可能就是说有些游戏啊，或者一些很特殊的情况下的话，你会用到。大多数情况下，大家都是用 Java， 这么都知道是吧？好，我们这个项目经理他在做这个演示的时候，他现在选中了 Native Activity， 因为这样做显示做得很好。它产生了一个叫做 OpenGL 的这个一个项目啊，大家可以看到，在这个在这个解决方案里面有两个项目，第一个项目就是这个 OpenGL 的这个 Native Activity 的 C 加加代码都在里面。第二个项目，下面第二个，刚才他选的那个，就我们叫做 Packaging Project， 这是干什么的？这是你的安卓的代码生成以后，我们给你打包打成 APK， 然后允许有这 APK 的话，你可以把它 install 装到这个安卓上面去。它给你显示这个项目里面一些特性啊，一些性质啊，你可以看到我们用的是 Client 3.4 来做编译的，就是说我针对这个，我们不自己去再自己做个 compiler， 我们这样做呢就是有点愚蠢了，对吧？别人都做好了，干脆拿了一块用，对，啊。稍微等一下，他可能在那个视频里面，他在解释其他一些东西，跟大家觉得奇怪，为什么没有什么任何反应？对，然后好，他把这个文件打开来给你看一下，就是说大体怎么回事。大家可以看到我们这个什么叫 browsing 的功能以及可以完全在这个安卓代码可以实现。他可能下面要编译生成了，他设了一个断点。Breakpoint 在这儿是吧？大家都知道，用 Visual Studio 的话，你要做 debugging 断点就这么设的，所以这用户体验跟你在 Windows 上开发是一模一样的。如果你在 Windows 上开发，用 Visual Studio 用得很顺手，你就不需要学任何东西，就自然而然就可以起来了。这是我们自己做的一个新的这个安卓的这个 emulator， 我不知道大家曾经用没用过用了以后，在美国的话，美国欧洲试用就是比较好评如潮，因为我们的速度性能大概比谷歌自己的那个安卓 emulator 快了4到5倍。好，它开始 debug 可以断点的达到了，可以看到 call stack 对吧？可以看到这个变量就这个体验完全跟一般用 VS 没有任何的。
Step away from the speaker.
Oh yeah, I'm getting a feedback. Sorry about that. 好，刚才断点，它让这个项目程序继续跑，现在的程序就已经被分布到安装到这个 emulator 上面了这是很简单的程序，就是那个屏幕的颜色发生变化我们 emulator 有很多功能，等一下 Steve 给大家演示一下。好，基本上就是关于安卓用 C 加加对安卓开发大致演示，非常非常简单概念化的演示就这么多很简单，到端我们都完全给大家实现了。你在安装 Visual Studio 2015的时候，我们都可以让你就知道到谷歌里面去，把它的 SDK 什么东西都自动下载下来下载到你选择的位置上，变得很方便。下一步他继续做这个演示，这演示干什么呢？我们一再强调，这个目的是为了跨平台，目的不是单纯为了安卓开发。那么他做这个演示就是说，在这个解决方案里面有三个项目，第一个项目是安卓项目，第二个项目可以看到，大家如果能看清楚的话，上面写的 Windows Phone 8.1 比如说你想这个写一个这个应用，可以在 Windows Phone 和安卓上都跑。那么第三个下面叫做 cross platform lib.shared， 那现在选择，这就是你的共享代码。 我们的建议，像刚才 Steve 显示的话，像 Office 把绝大多数可以共享的代码都抽出来，我们就帮你抽出来好了，放在一个项目里面，叫做共享项目。好，Would you mind pulling pause？在这里我们做了什么个重要的事情啊？做了一个重要的一个改进啊。你可以把这个可共享的代码打开以后，大家可能注意到这些地方有这个红色的和这个蓝色的这个波浪纹，我们叫 squiggle。这些东西是什么呢？既然这个代码是共享的话，那你在书写代码和修改代码的时候，你就希望你不会不小心把跟某个指对某个平台有关的一些 API 用到这个代码里面去，对吧？你一旦犯了这个错误，你不知道你要怎么编译的时候，你才可能发现，甚至有的时候要你整个编译完了跑动的时候才会发现，那太浪费时间了。我们就用智能感知，用 IntelliSense，会随时立刻地告诉你。嘿，老兄，你犯了错误了。这行代码的话，不应该用在共享的这个文件里面，你应该放到 Windows 里面去，或者放到 Android 那个项目里面去。这实在是非常非常有帮助，对吧？这是我们花了很大的功夫，就把这几个波浪纹要显示出来。大家都知道，我们等于把你的代码既要用两种 compiler 做背后分析，才能把这个几行波浪给你显示出来，有很多后面辛苦的工作。好，我想这个显示基本上大致意思就这样。
Shall we demo the emulator?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Starting from the emulator image.
好，我们给大家显示一下我们做这个 emulator 啊，做了哪些工作，希望大家也能喜欢啊。大家可以看到这个 emulator，我们是里面有好多选项可以选，你可以选这个，我们可以不同的这个屏幕大小。不同的这个 API level 对吧？大家可以看到这是 KitKat 对吧？这个还下面有 Jelly Bean 啊，这是 Lollipop，这是5.0，几乎就是说谷歌最新的这个安卓的版本的话，几乎我们都在这儿了，对。而且我们可以根据这个实际不同的市场上现有的手机，可以帮你模拟里面到底多少内存，是一个 gigabyte 2个 gigabyte 还是3个 gigabyte？所有这些 image 都可以自动下载。
这还会一直增加吗？
还会一直增加，对，而且可以根据这个广大这个用户的要求，我们当时在中国大陆显示的时候，他们对最新的这个安卓的这个平台版本倒不感兴趣，他们说我们很多用户实际上用的是很老的那个安卓，问问我们能不能够往后支持。大家可以看到，你可以翻跟头，对吧
？I'm just gonna do this all day.
Yeah, 对。这是simulate 这个 location 对吧？你的位置，这 GPS。How come we're not getting it？这是网络啊，对网络啊，下面还有电池 battery。你可以模仿 battery 到底是电快没的时候，还是电100%的时候？假如你的应用在电池不同的 level 的时候有变化的话，你可以通过这个来进行测试。可以做截图。可以做一些最基本的这个照相机的一些这个模拟，比如一些手机，它允许你加一个这个 SD 卡，我们也可以在上面模仿。
走
，OK，就这么多，这是关于安卓开发以及跨平台开发。我们实际上这个，请稍等一下，我们实际上对 iOS 的开发也已经支持了。但是那个知识就很难在这做一些演示，原因是因为苹果不允许，就是说编译在这个非 Mac 之外的机器上编译，所以你要做这个 iOS 开发的时候，你必须还有另外背后一台这个 Macintosh 在后面，所以就做起这个 demo 来非常困难，所以我们今天就在这里就不浪费大家时间了。好，刚才那位先生举手了，请问。His question is that our simulator is connected with ADB. The answer is that.
Yes, it is. The emulator is a completely standalone product. You can use just the emulator if you want. It will register itself with ADB, and therefore you can use it with any other tool that's manipulating ADB, such as Eclipse or Android Studio.
Thank you. 我们一开始是 ADB 做的时候是跟我们 Visual Studio Type 就连在一起耦合在一起的，后来我们觉得就说干脆给大家提供方便，把它作为单独一个产品，现在就可以自由下载，然后你可以跟 Eclipse 和 Android Studio 都可以使用。
Okay.
好，这是我们最下一个第最后一个 topic， 我们最 favorite topic 就是关于 productivity。
I believe strongly that one of the easiest things you can do to boost the productivity of any given developer is to make them spend less time sitting and watching their compilation. So in Visual Studio 2015, we focused on what we call incremental build throughput. Incremental build throughput is how fast the builds are when you're making a small edit. So there's this compile, edit, debug, or edit, compile, debug cycle where you make a small change to the code, you compile it, and then you go and you run through the debugger. Our goal in 2015 was to get that loop to be as tight as possible so that we made a bunch of changes in order to make it so that when you make a small edit to the source code, that the compilation is very fast. And it turns out that in a incremental build, the dominant time in the older versions of the product was actually in the linker, the thing that takes all the pieces and links them back together, because it was completely non-incremental. So in 2015, the linker is 3 times faster on average when performing full linking, and introduces the ability to do incremental linking when you have static libraries. Before, we used to have to completely relink static libraries every single time. A much faster way to generate PDB symbol files, and multi-threading in the linker. All of these things are just sort of under the covers how we accomplished it. But the net effect of it is this. This is the Visual Studio compiler itself. This is my developers doing this, so I care a lot, darn it. And so in 2013, it took us about 120 seconds to do a complete link on the entire compiler. CL.exe, C1XX.dll, all the pieces that make up the compiler. We can now build that in 3 times faster. If a developer goes and fixes a bug and makes a small change to their source code, 3 times faster. Forza, another Xbox One game, twice as fast. ConnectSport's Rivals, which had a lot of these static libs in it, is 10 times faster to link after compared to the previous version. We've also made improvements to the compilation times in certain areas of the compiler. So if you use a lot of templates, and I don't mean you have to write them yourselves, if you're including header files that have templates in them, i.e. the standard library, we will have significant improvements when we're working on template-heavy code when you go and compile that. Unreal 4 is a very popular game engine for writing 3D games, and so we took some of their samples, rebuilt them in Visual Studio 2015, and saw 38% faster compilation times.
行，
我想强调一下，刚才我们这个编译速度增加大幅度的增加，我们是在2015里面重点在增量编译上面有所改进，增量编译 incremental build， 它跟 full build 还不一样。所谓 full build 的话，就是说你把你整个代码从头到尾完全整个编译一遍。我们做了很多这个访问和调查，问了这个很多开发人员，你每天要花多少时间等等等等。后来我们发现，他们大多数时间是用在增量编译上，对吧？你写几行代码，修改一个代码，修改一个缺陷，这样的话，你不停的要进行编译。这种编译的话，并不是说把你整个这个程序所有的代码都从头到尾编一遍。
对，
我们觉得这是从业人员每天所花的最多的时间，所以我们把主要的精力都放在这个改进上。大家可以看到，我们努力还是有点效果的啊。根据你的代码的复杂程度不一样啊，这速度改进有时候从2倍到10倍不等啊。即使最小的话，像 Unreal 是个巨大的一个代码，它至少它也能达到38%的改进。
Okay, so let's talk about refactoring. Can I get a show of hands? Who uses Visual Assist in this room? 1, 2. Okay, good. What about ReSharper for C++?
ReSharper.
Same kind.
You still
use
it? Yay! He uninstalled it. No. We've added a bunch of new functionality into Visual Studio 2015. Today, many of our users do use those products. You know, it's a really good product, you know, but we'd like to make sure that we have the best possible in-the-box solution for editing C++ code. So we've been adding refactorings and other performance improvements to try to get much more in line with those products. Refactoring for C++. First one I want to talk about that's new in 2015 is the rename refactoring. Unlike some of the other competitors that we have for doing refactoring, ours is very exact. It may take a little bit longer to calculate all the places it needs to do the rename, but it will get them all. And so the rename refactor is when you have a function and you want to change its name, or you have a variable and you want to change its name, and it goes and it identifies all of the places that that particular function or variable is used and changes them. So this is an example of what you see when you do it. So if you want to rename some function to more useful name, it will go through and it will find all of the instances of that. And you can see here, this here is the actual declaration. This is a usage of it, and this is a second usage of it. As you can see, you can select from this, and you can even preview the changes of where the more useful name will be placed. We will also detect its use inside of strings, and then you can decide if you want to use them inside comments and strings. These are comments and strings. And so you have fine-grained control over your rename.
我想问一下各位，使用代码重构用的多不多？如果用的话，麻烦举手一下。好，有几位举手。对，代码重构的话，实际上在这个至少在欧美的这个 C 加加开发行业里面的话是非常非常流行的。原因的话就是说，一般 C 加加代码的话，一般都是年代都很久的，很多代码的话都是从以前别人那里有的时候也是从甚至公司从别人公司那里买来等等。代码重构能够让你的代码保持新生，就是通过不停的重构的话，有时候会把一些旧有的一些不好的习惯改正掉，然后根据你新的需要的话，把整个代码的总体的结构，甚至都可能发生一些很好的重新分配，这个重新命名，是据我们调查是使用最普遍最普遍的，在一个很老的代码的时候，有时候你觉得你的命名好像是很特殊，实际上不是这么一回事情。在不同的类里面和不同的命名空间里面，命名重复这样的现象是非常非常普遍。所以你想修改的话，尤其是你如果的代码是几十万上百万行的代码的话，你要把所有的名字都正确的修改，这有的时候手工甚至都做不到，不是说困难的事情，而我们基本上给你100%的做到修改。
Okay, this next one, which we've labeled a VS extension. So it's not actually in the box, but if you go onto the Visual Studio Gallery and search for extract method, you should find it. We wrote this. It's a really useful one. So the way this one works, and I'm sorry, I guess this is probably pretty hard to see, is you can select a region of code that you want to pull out into its own method. So in this case, we've got a for each loop here that we want to extract into another method. So what you do is you select the range. If you right click on it in the editor, in the right click menu, there will be an option to extract method in the quick actions. That will bring up this dialog, which you can give a name to the new function that you've extracted it into. It will give you a preview of the function and or method signature, which in this case is get int matches, and then it will automatically detect what the needed inputs and outputs of that will be. And then it will create the new method with that function signature, place the body in there, and then in the place where it was originally at, insert a call to that function. So it's very useful for going in and taking those big functions, and everybody knows a very big function is most likely to have more bugs in it because you can't really reason about it. So small functions are beautiful, and this is a way to go pull out those small little nuggets that really should be their own functions. Implement pure virtuals. If you have a class that has an abstract base class that has pure virtual functions in it, and then you create a class that inherits from that abstract base class, and then you right-click on the class in the editor, we give you the option to implement pure virtuals, and what that will do is create stub functions that for each of the required overloads for that class. Create declaration and definition allows you to go, for instance, into the header file, type the name of a new function's declaration, right click on that declaration, and then automatically generate an empty body into the matching CPP file. Or if you're in the .cpp file and you write a new method, you can actually right click and create a new declaration for that method in the matching.h file. Move definition location is about moving a function's declaration in line or out of line, so it will move the body to match the fact that it's in line, so it needs to go into the header. And this is a great one, and also another good feature from C++ 11. Who has code like this somewhere in their source base, like /n/t1/t2, escape the quotes? It's like a mess, right? These are really hard to get right. They have bugs in them. They're actually bad. They can even have potential security issues associated with them. With a brand new feature in C++ 11, that's called raw string literals, there is a new bit of syntax that goes capital R, quotation mark, parentheses, and then parentheses, quote. That allows you to do a raw string literal, so you just put the tabs in line and the slash ends where they go and don't have to worry about the quotes. Let's think about this in terms of paths, now you get it, right? Really useful. And so all you had to do was go into the editor, go find your old string that looked like this, right click on it, select convert to raw string literal, and it will automatically generate this code for you.
我终于从这个斜杠里面解放出来了。
We call this single file IntelliSense. We want you to be able to use Visual C++ or Visual Studio for any C++ code, especially code where you don't yet have it building inside of the IDE. So this is functionality. So all you have to do is go and open a, if you open a CPP file by itself, it will create a sort of fake solution under the covers and still give you full colorization, full browsing, the ability to go Alt F12 and jump to definition. But also when you type the arrow, you get the functions and full IntelliSense. This is very useful. And you can, if you really need to, we'll get most of the things like the standard library correct automatically, basic types and the STL and headers correct. But you can also go in and right-click in here to make more advanced edits if you need to specialize the include path a bit.
Oh, the comments, yeah. 2015以前的话，就是我们关于智能感知这方面的话和浏览代码，我们有个限制，就是说你一定要把这个项目打开，我们才能准确的给你这个智能感知这个IntelliSense的信息。 我遇到很多用户的反馈，说的太麻烦了。有的时候我只想就说把这个文件一个文件打开来，我做些很快的代码修改。你们能不方便？我们也听到用户的反馈，所以这是我们加在里面的话。在这种情况下，有的时候就是说这个智能感知 IntelliSense 不可能保证100%的正确，因为有的时候它会引用其他的文件，这些文件没有调起来的话，我们没有办法去读它。但是基本上我们可能达到80%-90%的正确性在这。 实在遇到一些情况下的话，比如说用一些其他人的这个SDK啊，或者是这个库啊，我们找不到的话，我们可以允许，就是说在这个项目上面，你可以到这儿，你自己手动把这个文件的这个 pass 加进去的话，那我们就可以把这些其他东西都进去。We
have we demonstrated the shared project functionality earlier today in the context of Android and Windows Phone. That same shared project scenario works just as well for within Windows development, so that you can have, you know, a desktop app sharing with a Windows Phone app, sharing with a universal Windows platform app, and you get great IntelliSense that's correct based on whichever configuration you select at any given time. We've done a lot of work to improve the speed of populating the database that we use to hold the IntelliSense information. So hopefully you'll spend less time sitting and waiting for Visual Studio to become responsive. This is a cool one. Today, in the product, if you type wstring, mystring, and then parentheses to get the helpful information about what the name of the parameters are, we give you 3 lines worth of helpful information. Lots of it not being particularly useful. In 2015, this turns into exactly what you probably were looking for. You know, wstring write, size, count, allocator. Simplified information, much more productive. Finally, I want to talk about this. This is Visual Studio Extension. Again, it's in the gallery. If you search for that name, you'll find it. This was actually written by one of our interns last summer. And PCH stands for Precompiled Header. Precompiled Header is one of the best techniques that we have inside the compiler to improve your build times. So if you're not using, this is the standard afx.h file that gets generated into many projects by default. What it does is any header file that you put in stdafx.h gets compiled only one time and then shared across every CPP file you have. Otherwise, the way the language is written, the way the language standard is written, we are required to reparse those header files for every CPP file. So what this tool does is analyze your project to identify which headers you're using the most frequently and then recommend those so that you include them in the PCH file. Likewise, if you're using a header file that isn't getting used in many places, it'll suggest that you take it out of there because it's not helping you. So you want to find the right balance between frequency of use and frequency of change. If you have a file that gets used constantly and gets changed very rarely, you definitely want it in your PCH file. And diagnostics, which I think I'm going to stop.
We're going to do the diagnostics, yeah.
Yeah,
I think all of these things.
This I'm not going to demo, and since somebody asked me about DirectX in the break, we have a new DirectX GPU usage tool, which is very useful for identifying frame rate issues inside of video games. So you have basically all of the CPUs and your activity on the GPU here. You can see your CPU usage and your GPU usage. And identify places inside of an application where you're missing your sync time, and that can cause your game to miss the 60 frames per second target. And likewise, we've done quite a bit of work on the Visual Studio graphics diagnostics, including the ability to do shader, edit, and apply so that you don't have to rebuild an entire game just to make a small tweak to a shader. And we continue to work on full support for DirectX 12. I'm going to demonstrate that in a minute. And that's it for productivity.
好，我们接下来啊，关于这个提高日常工作当中工作效率的一些细小的这个改进，我们就讲到此为止。接下来Steve 可能给大家介绍一下，就是说使用 Visual Studio Diagnostics， 就是说这个调试器。和这个性能剖析器和内存剖析器一些最佳使用方法，因为我们两个人在领导 C 加加团队之前，我们俩合作去领导这个 diagnostics team， 所以这套工具的话都是在很多东西都是在我们领导的时候完产生的，所以对此我们在他在我们的心中占有特殊的地位。而同时的话，我们这访问了很多客户，后来发现的话。也许我们这些功能啊，可能加了很多很多，可能大家都没有意识到，有些功能实际上两个版本之前都已经有了。我们展示的时候，很多顾客都觉得很惊奇啊，你们能做这个？我说依然已经五年在那儿了，所以正因为这个原因，所以我们待会儿 CEO 做这个介绍的时候，可能有些你们大家说啊，我已经知道了，这是2013版本或者2012版本都已经有了。尽管如此，我还是想把它全拿出来，倾囊，就是我把它给大家讲解一下。好吧，我想我们可能就继续吧，好吧，我们争取在这个4点钟是吧？现在几点？
可以吗？
可不可以？
现在三点快要的起。
需要休息吗？我们随便啊，大家说要休息，我们就休息10分钟。如果
可以吗？可以，我们就继续了。
继续吧。
等我时间，反而可以问点问题，好吧？
对对对，好，咱们继续。OK, Steve.
Yep.
Let's go with diagnostics.
Oh, you want me to just keep going?
Yeah.
All right. All right. No rest for the wicked. I'm going to get my chair set up here since this is mostly demo. Be nicer. I'll try this in Chinese. All right. So this is going to be all demo. So pardon me while I juggle microphone and Visual Studio.
对，下面呢主要都是我们做演示，基本上没有什么 slide deck， 对，就现场操作。
Did you set this up already, or should I say stuff?
No, you don't need to say anything. Let's just go.
All right. So to start off, I'm going to show you a bunch of different tricks in the debugger. almost everything I'm going to show you here is, sorry, I will call out all of the things that are actually new. Many of the things that I'm going to show you in 2015 aren't necessarily new, but they're very well hidden in earlier versions of the product. So I'll try to remember to also call out where you can find these things in the older versions of the product. So the first thing I want to tell you is that if you're ever looking for treasure inside of Visual Studio, the hidden treasure is almost always on the right-click menu. So,
右键菜单里面藏了很多很多有用的东西，对，希望大家不停用右键去到处找去。
Okay, first things first. Let's imagine you're coming at this new source base here for the first time. You want to start it up, but you kind of want to look through how it actually starts as opposed to setting some breakpoint because you always already know where you want to investigate. Most of the time when I start the debugger, I use function F5. F5 is the start the debugger thing, and that's what happens when you push this big button up here. It turns out that you can actually start the debugger by hitting F10. What will happen is we will jump to the very first line of the main function. There's actually a hidden breakpoint there, and F10 instead of F5 tells the debugger to please stop at it. Okay, this first set of tricks and tips is all going to be about how to get very fine and precise control over the debugger's execution of the code. I'm going to show you how to move the execution all around and how to have fine-grained control. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to run to this first breakpoint. Take a look at here. We have four different functions on this line. First func, second func, third func, and fourth func. The first thing I'm going to do is, again, do the hidden right-click menu. There is a very rarely used but extraordinarily useful feature called step into specific here. How do you say that in Chinese?
I don't know.
Oh, woman,
don't
you doubt. Okay. So I'm going to step into third func directly. And that takes me, it still ran all those functions, but it basically what it did is set a temporary breakpoint right at the beginning of third func and ran straight to that point and then broke. I'm going to show you a place later where this is useful, but like imagine skipping over lots of constructors that you don't care about to get to the one function that matters. Okay, so the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to step back out. So that's this button over here, or Shift F11. I'm going to go back up. So this says step out of the function. So rather than stepping off the end of it in order to get back to where I came from, I'm going to tell it to just go straight back up. Okay, here I am back again. All right. So now, let's imagine that, you know what? I didn't want to step into third function. I actually intended to step into fourth function. I haven't changed any state or anything here. These all just return bool. So what I'm going to do is, rather than having to restart the debugger, which you could imagine, it takes me all the time to get back to the point in the program, you know, reload the file, do the repro, whatever. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to right-click here at the beginning of the function, bring up the right-click menu, and I'm going to choose this, also very frequently used function called set next statement. What that's going to do is it's going to set the location that the debugger is pointed at back to the line that I clicked on. So I'm going to click that, Control-Shift F10. All right, I'm back to the beginning of the function now. It hasn't really run anything backwards. It hasn't undone any state. But what it has done is reset the instruction pointer, the next instruction to execute, back to the beginning of the function. So now I'm going to step one more time back up to that function, and instead of stepping into the fourth function, I'm going to step into fourth. Okay, here I am. I'm going to do some stepping into, so that's function F11 to keep going and following the steps more deeply in. Okay, so now I'm pretty deep. I'm going to go back to the call stack window, and you can see I am currently on deep func. If I double click on here, what it'll do is it'll show me what the function that called this was in the context there. That's what this little arrow means. I came from here. But what if you want to, like, basically run back, like, step out multiple levels? You can, of course, like anything, continue to hammer on that step out button, but there's always the chance that you'll miss and those sorts of things. So the right-click trick also applies in the call stack menu. If I right-click in the call stack menu, I have this function called run to cursor. Run to cursor says, run the debugger until you hit this point. So I'm going to run the debugger back to wmain. And here I am again. So this is also useful just for setting one-time breakpoints to wherever you are clicking in the cursor. So I'm going to do the same thing to go and run over this to the line with the XML string on it. So once again, I go into the right-click menu on the line that I want to run to, click run to cursor, and it executes your code to that point.
对，这样就不用再设断点了。你主只要一次性的这行代码的话，就说run to光标就下来了。
You can also do that over here in the gutter, what we call the gutter, where we put all the breakpoints. You can actually just pick up this arrow and just pull it to where you want it to go. So like I can just pull it back up to the beginning of the function, and now I reset back to the beginning of the function. Okay. So I think that's all I'm saying. Oh, yeah. Oops, went too far. That's okay, I'll just set the next statement. All right, on this function now, we have what we call visualizers for many string data types. If I hover over this string type, and instead of, if I click on here, I can see all the, 0, 1, 2, 3, I can see all the little characters that make up the string. Not very useful, right? And I think most people know that if you click on this, you get a text visualizer that puts the whole string up in here. But if you click on this little guy here, it brings up another menu that allows you to choose how you want to visualize that string. And we have four different choices here. So this is an XML string, so I'm going to choose the XML visualizer. And so you can imagine how useful this is when you have a very complex XML string, perhaps it's come back from a call to a web service. It allows you to collapse and just focus on the parts that you want. Okay, so let's imagine we're looking at this and go, yeah, you know what? This is actually, I'm fixing this bug. I actually didn't want D in here. I'm going to change this string. So, in the olden days, before you had attended this oh-so-excellent talk, you would have, maybe hit stop in the debugger and then restarted it up again so that it would recompile the function with the change in it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to just change the string to what I want it to be, and then I'm going to step. Okay, what happened, oh, watch quick, back here in the output window, was it detected that I made a small change, and it recompiled that file to get the new version of the function. It then went into memory, swapped out the old version of the file, of that function, and set the instruction pointer to the exact same point in the new version of the function. So now, when I've stepped, you'll see that this is the new version of the string, not the old version, even though I never stopped the debugger to rebuild and restart the repro. This is super duper useful when you are working on a bug that is really deep into a repro, or you want to just keep trying things until it works. You just keep making edits to the source file, pull the instruction pointer back to before the code that you changed, and try it again, and keep trying until you get the fix right. It's a much more productive way of fixing bugs. Okay. This next feature is not really a debugger feature, but oh, it doesn't always work. So let me try it. Control F12.
Stop. You have to stop. Right? You did it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that's actually what it is.
Okay.
I'm actually going to skip that part. Okay, so this is underscore underscore debug break. Underscore underscore debug break is a way to specify in your source code where you want to have a breakpoint. So, like, a lot of times if I have a